This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Welcome to the Investor Download, the podcast about the themes driving markets and the economy now and in the future. I'm your host, David Brett. And on today's show,
we look into the weird and wonderful world of SPACs. We'll discuss what they are.
So it doesn't have an operating business when it starts. It is nothing more than a pot of cash and a sponsor who says that they are going to go and try and find the right company to buy.
The somewhat bizarre nature of some of their owners.
But there's also kind of slightly bizarrely been a trend towards celebrities setting them up. It's more questionable whether they have the relevant expertise to acquire companies.
And the rewards and risks at stake.
Some will do well, some will do badly, but please, please, please heed the SEC's warning. Don't just get sucked in because it's a famous name you see fronting it up.
There's an investment craze sweeping the markets.
SPAC is the word on the tip of everyone's tongue these days.
SPACs. SPAC stand for Special Acquisition Vehicles. Some of the hottest trades of this year have come from SPACs.
It's a spectacular time for the special purpose acquisition companies. They've stormed Wall Street over the past year, and SPACs are eating the initial public offering market. Having averaged 17 a year between 2003 and 2019, there were 248 SPACs in 2020. And already in 2021, over the first 3 months, there's been 300. And the amount of money raised has already eclipsed that in 2020.
So this is, it's not just something which is of interest to kind of nerdy market watchers like me. It really is a quite transformative change that we're seeing.
That's Duncan Lamont, head of strategic research at Schroders. He'll be holding our hands and walking us through everything SPAC related. Technology companies, perhaps unsurprisingly, are leading the charge. But SPACs are much broader than that, and the trend towards new offerings in SPAC stocks is growing by leaps and bounds. But they come with a health warning.
Well, the SEC warning people not to invest in a special purpose acquisition company, a SPAC.
So in this show, we'll look at whether SPACs are healthy for investors and stock markets and delve into their pros and cons. But in the first part of the show, we'll take you through what a SPAC is and why the SPAC market has gone so crazy over the last 2 years.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
Okay, Duncan, so let's get straight into it. Can you just explain what a SPAC actually is?
I start very high level. So at a very high level, a SPAC is a set up by someone who's known as a sponsor. They're basically fronting it up, and they go and raise some money from outside investors in an initial public offering. And then with this money... they list the vehicle, the SPAC, on the stock market. At this point in time, it is nothing more than a pot of cash and a sponsor fronting it up who says they are going to use that cash to go and try and find a company to buy within a period of about 2 years. So it doesn't have an operating business when it starts. It is nothing more than a pot of cash and a sponsor who says that they are going to go and try and find the right company to buy. So a lot of it hangs on the credibility, the reputation of that sponsor, because investors really, they're not getting anything else for their money at that point in time. And then they've got about 2 years where they go to try to find a company to buy. And if they fail to find a company, if they fail to get shareholder approval for the acquisition, if they fail to raise any more money they need to complete it, the SPAC is wound up and cash is returned to shareholders. D-
does the sponsor need to meet any financial authority regulations? Are they vetted by anyone before they start to try to do this?
Not really. Pretty much anyone can be a sponsor. And this is kind of one of the reasons why it started flashing a few warning bells for regulators. Some of these would be set up by former private equity deal makers, board members of, say, Fortune 500 companies, M&A bankers from the big investment banks. So they could be people who've got industry expertise in running businesses or in buying companies or in mergers and acquisitions. So there could be people who you would think, yeah, they've got some relevant expertise. But there's also kind of slightly bizarrely been a trend towards celebrities setting them up. Shaquille O'Neal, the basketball player.
So WeWork lost $3.2 billion last year. Now it wants to go public with a SPAC advised by Shaquille O'Neal. What world have we got ourselves into?
Alex Rodriguez, kind of Major League Baseball player.
Slam Corp is a new blank check company making its debut later this morning on the NASDAQ. The SPAC is seeking to raise up to $500 million to look for a target in the sports, media, entertainment, health or wellness sector. And joining us right now is Alex Rodriguez.
Kiara, pop star, they all have SPACs. And I guess you could say they have certainly will have a healthy contacts book, which could perhaps open some doors.
I know that I personally have tremendous deal flow. Amantra has a tremendous back record with Antara. And I think together, 1 + 1 = 5.
But it's more questionable whether they have the relevant expertise to acquire companies, to be able to do the kind of financial side of it there. So they will surround themselves with a team who will help on that side. But the SEC themselves have actually put out an alert warning investors not just to put your money into a SPAC because you see a famous name who's fronting it, because that's certainly one of the risks for investors, that you get hooked in and it might not work out well for you.
So when they first set up the SPAC, do they have to say to their investors what they're setting up the SPAC for, as in what they're going to invest in?
So it's actually a regulatory requirement that they're not allowed to have a particular target company in mind when they list on the stock market. If they were to have one in mind, there would have to be a lot more disclosures about the company that they were going to be buying and its financials. So they actually are specifically prevented from being that far on. They might put something in the prospectus saying we will look for companies in a particular sector, so technology perhaps, might be in a particular region. Maybe they'll say they're focusing on the US or Europe or Asia, or they might not. And even if they do say they're intending to look in a particular area, there is nothing to stop them going off in a completely different direction. So there's very, very little visibility when a SPAC lists. Probably what would be a useful thing to pay attention to is if someone has particular expertise in particular sectors that is launching a SPAC, you would think it was most likely that they were looking for somebody in the areas where they have contacts, where they have expertise, but there's nothing to hold them to that. But one of the ways that a SPAC actually works to provide some level of protection from investors, because as you can imagine here, someone could raise some money, there's no regulatory requirement for them to have any particular background, and then they could just take your investors' money and go off and fritter it away on expensive flights or enriching themselves. So to guard against that risk, the way a SPAC works is actually all of the money that investors put into it in the initial public offering is ring-fenced off to the side and held in a trust account. So this is basically cash that is held in trust that gets invested in treasury bills, basically just low-risk assets. They're not going to take the money and invest it in the S&P 500 or anything. It's meant to be like a bank account, but a bank account that the sponsor isn't allowed to touch other than for a range of very limited and specific reasons, one of which would be actually buying a company. So in this way, the investor's money is guarded from being frittered away during that period. And the sponsor's only allowed to actually touch that money for a kind of specific range of activities. What happens then is that the sponsor then, they will put some money in themselves, but actually a relatively small amount. They put in a nominal amount of money, and they get about 20% of the SPAC for in return for that. That's basically what they get paid for the deal. They are saying, I'm staking my reputation on this. I'm going to go and put perhaps 2 years worth of work into this to try to find a company that will make a good deal. And they get 20% of the SPAC effectively as their payment for that. When investors invest in the IPO, actually another important point is worth noting is they get something that's called a unit in the SPAC. And the unit, normally in a normal IPO, you give your money to a company and you get a share in that company. In a SPAC, you get a share plus you get something called a warrant, or a fraction of a warrant. And that is basically allows you to buy another share or a fraction of a share at another date in the future. And the way this works is basically if the value of the company goes up, the value of those warrants will go up. So as well as IPO investors getting a share in the company, they also get this warrant, which gives them some additional potential upside if the company actually becomes successful. And then you have this 2 year period where the SPAC exists and the sponsors off looking for potential targets. During that point in time, the IPO investors can buy and sell their shares in the stock market like any other shares. So let's say you, Dave, you've bought shares in Dave Brett's SPAC at the IPO. The sponsor then off looking for a deal, and then I didn't participate in the IPO, but I could come and buy your shares from you. And they would trade at whatever the price was. So if you think of it, remember back to the thing I said earlier, the money that is raised is held in trust account, and it's normally raised at about $10 a share. So the share price of a SPAC doesn't tend to vary that much from $10. It can do, but most of the time, because during that period, it is nothing more than a trust bank account with $10 per share in it, the share price stays relatively close to $10. If everybody thinks that the sponsor is the best sponsor in the world and actually they all want a piece of the action, then the price might go up. If everybody starts getting worried that this SPAC might not be able to do a deal or something's going to go wrong, the price could fall. But at that point in time, that 2 year period, the shares can be bought and sold in the market. Those extra things, the warrants, they can be bought and sold in the market as well. At some point, the sponsor is going to come along and say, well, hopefully, if they've done their job well, look, I've found this company. I think we should buy it. It's going to cost more than the money we've got in the SPAC right now, so we're going to need to raise some extra money. And then shareholders will have the ability to vote on that deal. So to say, yes, we think that should go ahead, or no, we don't think it should go ahead. The clever way that SPACs are structured as well, it means at that point in time, investors are also able to redeem their shares, which means they can sell their shares back to the SPAC and get back what they paid for them, plus interest. So let's say you think it's a rubbish deal. Well, actually, you can get your $10 a share plus interest repaid to you from the trust account. So there's an element of protection there from investors that if you don't like the deal, you don't have to go ahead with it. You can get your money back. But assuming that the deal gets approved, assuming that the SPAC is able to raise additional money, because often the companies they're buying are, could be much larger than the SPAC itself, then the deal will be consummated. The SPAC, it will go through a process called de-SPACing. It will transition to an operating business, and then it will just be like any other company on the stock market. Perhaps it happened to start life as a SPAC, but from that point onwards, it's just an operating business listed on the stock market like any other one that you could think of.
So before the sponsor finds a company and the SPAC consumes that company, what's the difference between a SPAC and, say, a shell company?
So essentially, a shell company is a company that's listed on the stock market that, for whatever reason, its business has been wound down. It retained a stock market listing. It's maybe got some cash, but it doesn't have any operating business anymore. So it's almost like it's like a legacy company in that sense. You contrast that with a SPAC, whereas a SPAC is something that has been set up brand new with a bank account full of cash that is going off looking for companies to buy. So the difference is probably the genesis. The shell company comes from a legacy public company, whereas a SPAC is actually a brand new listed entity that is going to look for a company. But at the end of the day, they are essentially quite similar in that sense. other than that, I guess the SPAC's got more of a, I guess, a clean bill of health because there's no legacy issues with the organisation because it is brand new.
And just finally, what happens if they find a company and a deal can't be done or the shareholders vote it down?
So at that point in time, the SPAC is dissolved. So basically, it ceases to exist. The money that is in the trust account then gets distributed back to all of the shareholders on a kind of pro rata basis. So you'll get back your $10. Let's say you paid $10 a share at the start. At the end of the two-year period, they have no company. It gets voted down. Then the $10 per share plus interest will be returned to investors. So it provides, I guess, a degree of protection for investors in that sense.
Okay, so that's what a SPAC is. In part two of the show, we're going to look at why SPACs have become so popular and what's not to like about them.
Get in touch with us by email at schroederspodcasts@schroeders.com or visit our website, schroeders.com/investor download.
So Duncan, we know what SPACs now are. Let's look at why SPACs have become so popular. Let's start with the companies that are being taken over. What's so attractive about SPACs?
Well, there's a number of different reasons. So one that I've written about this myself in the past is there's been about a 50% decline in the number of public companies, so companies listed on the stock market in the last 20 years or so. And a lot of that's because of the increased cost and hassle of being a public company, because you can raise money more easily from elsewhere, so from private equity or from debt. And a SPAC actually provides a way that removes some of that hassle from private companies when they wanted to go public. So one of the things that private companies don't like, or that they don't always like with an IPO, is that IPOs are often priced to try to encourage a first taking pop in the share price. So a number of the big US IPOs in the last year, when they floated in the stock market, the share price jumps dramatically on the first day. And if you're a founder and you're selling shares in your company, that leads them to feel a bit, they can feel like they've left money on the table. Because let's say you sold shares in the IPO at $10 and then the next day the share price is $20. Well, then the founders might think, well, maybe we should have sold shares at $20 in the first place. We've given up more of our company than we wanted to. So it's feeling you've left money on the table. But actually, in a SPAC, you are negotiating as a merger. So the SPAC is coming along and saying, we want to buy you. And the founders of the private company can negotiate a sale at what they think is closer to a fair value. One of the really important factors that is behind the appeal from the private company is when you are negotiating your sale there, you are allowed to use forward-looking statements about your organization. So how you think the business, not where it is right now or where it's been in the past, but where it might be in 3 years' time, what you're thinking about profit growth, sales growth, how that will all evolve over time. And if you're a fast-growing company, you're probably saying to actually, don't look at where we are right now, look at where we're going to be in a few years' time. That's why we are worth the price we say we are. So the contrast with a traditional IPO is actually you generally don't get any forward-looking statements. The prospectus typically will only show historical financial results to avoid any legal liability if those forecasts are not met. So where it's an interesting kind of regulatory arbitrage. For an IPO, you generally only present historical numbers, whereas a SPAC sale, the founders will be able to sell themselves on the basis of forecast numbers. And that can be really appealing if you're a fast-growing company. There's also the fact that if you've got a complicated business model, then actually an IPO, would the market be able to understand some of the complexities of your business model? If you think that actually they might not, then you might not be able to sell yourself for such a high price. In contrast with a SPAC, you could actually go and talk to those sponsors who have specialist expertise in your sector and who will be able to understand and value your business better. There's also the fact you have more certainty on pricing. So in an IPO, they'll say there's whatever the pricing is going to be within a range, and that range will move around as you get nearer to the IPO based on what happens to market conditions. In a SPAC, you negotiate it and it's all set out in the merger document. So again, you have more visibility of what the pricing is going to be. It can be faster. So a SPAC merger can take place in maybe 5 or 6 months, maybe 12 to 24 months for an IPO. and the regulatory demands are also less. So I guess it's higher price, more certainty on pricing, faster, and reduced regulatory burden, all of which from a private company's perspective say, actually, this makes it easier and more appealing for me to go public, to join the stock market. So it kind of shortcuts some of the reasons companies have been choosing to stay private.
As we move on to the actual IPO investors, that's also some of the reasons why they might find investing in the SPAC attractive.
Yes, I guess you're getting access to companies that otherwise might not have joined the stock market. So it's appealing from that perspective. But what actually, if you participate in the IPO of the SPAC, one of the things that makes it really appealing is you get the shares, plus you get these warrants. And if the company is worth something, the warrants will potentially be worth an awful lot of money. But you've also got this possibility that when a deal is presented, you can redeem your shares, so you can sell them back for what you paid for. But you've also got the warrant. So think about that. You pay your $10, you get a share and a warrant, you then decide, okay, I'll sell them back for $10, so you get your money back, but you've still got the warrant. And if the SPAC's successful, that warrant will be worth some money. So it's a bit like a money-back guarantee, but you get to retain some upside. So if you participate in the IPO, you can see why this is quite an appealing payoff structure. And actually, most SPAC IPO investors actually do take up this option. There's an academic study which found that almost 3/4 of IPO proceeds actually would ultimately be kind of redeemed in this process. So almost 3/4 of the money that is raised, people then decide to actually sell those shares back to the company, but keep the warrants, possibly. So most people take up this money back guarantee. And actually, a lot of this is hedge funds. It's really popular trade for hedge funds to have been done. There's also a bit of a belief that, let's say if it's a really hot IPO, everyone will put in how many shares they want to buy or how much money they want to invest. And there'll generally be too much demand. So you might say, I want to buy, I don't know, $20 million worth of shares. But actually, they'll say there's so much demand, you're only going to get $10 million or $5 million or whatever the number is. There is some belief that if you are, say, getting early in a SPAC IPO, that actually, if they need to raise additional money in future, you've got a seat at the table and access to high quality information. So you might actually be able to get a bigger stake in the company than you would in a typical IPO as well. But I'd say the main one is the fact that this kind of money back guarantee whilst retaining some upside potential means it's quite an appealing offer for an IPO investor.
Okay, and finally, what do the sponsors get out of it? What's so attractive to be a sponsor?
Well, they don't put up much money up front necessarily, and they get about 20% of the SPAC in return for it. So they can make hundreds of millions of dollars for a relatively small upfront stake. It's really important to think about this and the incentives that this creates, because actually their incentive is to get any deal whatsoever done. Even if it's a bad deal for outside investors, that can still make the sponsors an awful lot of money. And the worst case scenario for them is you don't find a deal, you wind up the SPAC, you've committed 2 years of your time, and actually you've got nothing to show for it. Anything is better than that. So they will be keen to do any deal whatsoever, even if it is not necessarily in the best interests of outside investors.
And at that point, the initial investors will get the chance to get their money back.
Yeah, the IPO investors will get the chance to get their money back. It depends on what price you've bought them at. So let's say because the shares trade in the market at like any other company during that kind of deal hunting phase, it's quite possible the shares are trading at $12 at some point. So somebody bought some shares at $12, but they find they're only going to get back $10. So you get it back at the IPO price, but that won't necessarily mean that everybody gets away without losing any money.
Okay, so that brings us nicely on to what's not to like about SPACs. Let's start with investing after the IPO.
Yeah, and one of the points is the one I just made there. It's quite possible that investors after the IPO could potentially pay more than $10, but actually get back only $10 if they decide that they don't like the deal. But the main one is just the fact that if you participate in the IPO, you get shares plus warrants. If you buy shares afterwards, you just get shares. So you just get a less good deal. And I guess historically, returns for SPACs actually haven't always been wonderful. There'll be some that will be pretty good, but there'll be some that might not be so good as well. And it can be, I guess, hard for retail investors in particular who get hooked in maybe by some of the kind of famous names who are backing some of these things, that to discriminate between, well, which SPACs are actually worth giving your money to and which ones aren't.
Okay, so again, you are relying on the sponsor of the SPAC being of good repute and trusting them to make a deal as good as you think the deal might be.
Yeah, so it's all hanging on, does that person have the network, the contacts, the expertise to get the right deal done at the right price? And that's essentially what a SPAC is. It's confidence in that person and their reputation, which is why I guess you have seen this trend towards famous names, including celebrities, because it's the reputation which encourages people to invest. Albeit that you do have some weird outcomes, like Shaquille O'Neal, the basketball player's SPAC, is buying WeWork. Which you might remember as the kind of flexible office company, which went to a tremendously high valuation, then tried to IPO itself, collapsed, and is now looking to go public via a SPAC, being led by a basketball player. It's hard to kind of get your head around some of these things.
It's a crazy world. And just one last question on this section. Is there a specific reason why they've become so popular in the last couple of years or so?
I guess there are elements to this which are a little bit bubbly, I would say. So in the last few years, there have been technology companies in particular which have gone to very high valuations, but most of this has been taking place in the private markets. So look, you've got your big tech companies, obviously, like your Google, your Alphabet, your Microsoft and things like that, but there's been a huge boom in companies being bought and financed by private equity. And then a lot of those, it kind of cuts out individuals. So your average investor isn't able to participate in it when it's all taking place in private equity. And these are, I guess, one way to try to find a way to encourage more of those companies to go public. But I think that the bubbly bit is more just the fact that you are writing a blank check. Yeah, you're giving your money to the sponsor thinking they're going to go off and find something. And we've been in an environment where there's been a lot of capital sloshing around in markets, and the willingness of people to do this is certainly a sign that at such high valuations and at such huge amounts of money being raised by these vehicles, it does suggest to me there's an awful lot of money that is looking for a home, and they've just managed to ride that wave, really.
Okay, so in the final part of the show, we're just going to look at whether or not SPACs are a good thing for investors and markets. So, Duncan, I mean, that last comment brings us very nicely onto the ultimate question. I mean, are SPACs a good thing? Let's say a good thing for investors, first of all. Are they a good thing for investors?
Money back guarantee. That's obviously an attraction. You've got a limit to how much you could lose if you participate in the SPAC. Your IPO investor, you've got your warrants as well. You've got ability to have access to high quality information. So looks pretty good for investors in that sense. If you're a company, again, it's a nice route to go to join the stock market. Less clear cut if you invest in the aftermarket. So if you buy shares in a SPAC, not in the IPO, but before they found a company, you do have to remember it's a blank check company, and you're putting your faith in that sponsor. Some will do well, some will do badly, but please, please, please heed the SEC's warning. Don't just get sucked in because it's a famous name you see fronting it up. You've got to do more due diligence than that. But despite some of these kind of negative aspects I've mentioned, I actually am much more in favour of SPACs than that might give the impression. And this is partly to do with the comment I made earlier about for too long, I think we've had a situation where companies have been put off from wanting to join the stock market. And I do worry that the longer this goes on, the more of the kind of value is being captured by private equity investors, because companies are either not joining the stock market at all, or they're waiting to their older, more mature, potentially slower growing businesses. So more of the value has been captured privately and has not been captured by the stock market. And I have concerns that if it persists, this could lead to a world where we have lower stock market returns. And the people who bear the brunt of that are your ordinary savers. Your average individual can't go off and invest in a private equity fund. The fees are too high. They don't have enough money to even get a look in. So it's just, they're just going to cut out from a lot of that. And I think that any kind of innovation which actually encourages private companies to want to join the stock market is to be welcomed. And I think that SPACs are an example of more innovation in the IPO process. Other ones would be things like direct listings as well, which are when companies can go public, but not through the typical IPO process, often not actually by raising any new capital at all. So I think that, yes, there are bubbly aspects to it. If you buy shares not in the IPO, you don't get such a good deal. But ultimately, we have to think about what this might achieve. And this might achieve an end point where we have more companies joining the stock market than we otherwise might have happened. And I think that is why I think that actually they potentially bring a lot of benefit. Be discriminating. No one forces you to invest in a SPAC whilst it is still a SPAC. Completely ignore them if you want, and wait until it actually becomes, finds a company, and then assess it on whether you think that company is worth investing in. Like, I think the end point there of a more thriving public market is really the thing that kind of catches my eye, and why I think that actually this could be a positive move. So although there are risks, we shouldn't lose sight of the longer term benefits that a thriving public market can bring, and the SPACs can be part of that solution.
Here's what else investors are talking about. India has undergone a process of major long-term reforms and change over the last few years, laying the foundations for sustained future growth. It comes after a number of setbacks around crony capitalism and corruption scandals in the past decade. But the pandemic has accelerated India's digital revolution. In the first of a two-part note, we look at some of the driving forces. You can read How the Digital Age is Transforming India by Schroders India investment specialist Jigar Gandhi at schroders.com/insights, where you can read, watch and listen to much, much more. Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch with us about anything on the show or give us ideas for future shows, you can email us at schroderspodcast@schroders.com. If you want to listen to the Investor Downloads back catalogue, and why wouldn't you? You can go to schroders.com/the Investor Download or rate, review and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. New shows are available every Thursday and every other Monday from 5 p.m. UK time. But above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.